Good morning, folks. It's your good friend Dan in Little Saigon. And it is July the 23rd, 2019. And, it's Tuesday morning. That's great. I am sitting here drinking my coffee. It's almost 5:30 a.m. I will be reporting on the state of the Great Snake within the next, hour or so. I will be running a report that shows errors and failures and QA status and blah, blah, blah. I have one more day of being on call, so that's good. It means that I don't have to, be obsessed, because I have OCD. When I'm on call, it more or less puts me into a weird state. And so, I've got one more day of being on call. But in reality, because of the size of my team at Willy Wonka's, we're all kind of on call all the time. And it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Here's the thing that a lot of people need to process. It's okay to complain. It really is. It's also important to remember that other people probably have it as bad or worse than you. In fact, if you have the money to listen to this podcast, or more interestingly, if you have the money to make a podcast, you're probably living better than most of the people on planet Earth. Now, that may seem like an oversimplification, because you might say, well, I'm really poor, and I do podcasts off my phone. I get that. But I'm saying, generally speaking, people who have the time to just sort of take a moment and think about something and then talk about it, it's kind of a luxury these days. My job at Willy Wonka's, if I'm doing it well, and this is really fucking important for the peanut gallery to listen to, my job at Willy Wonka's, if I'm doing it well, sucks all of the creative energy out of me. Okay? Because of my commute, it is pretty much, at least a 12 to 13 hour day. And if I get 6 or 7 hours of sleep, which I kind of like to get if I can, it means I got 4 or 5 hours to myself, maybe on any given day. And guess what, guys? If you're parents out there, I get it. You're about to fucking say boo-hoo. You know what? Boo-hoo is right. Because like I said, all of that might be true, and I still live better than most of the fucking people on planet Earth. These are the things you need to think about. It's okay to complain. It really is. I had a friend when I was in ROTC who was an ROTC with me, but he had been a U.S. Army Ranger. And I asked him if Rangers if as a Ranger, we were on an exercise, and I said, as a Ranger, have you ever felt sorry for yourself? And he said, I knew a Special Forces guy once, and he said, you should give yourself 5 minutes every fucking day to feel sorry for yourself, and no more. Some of you may need 0 minutes, and if you're one of those people, if you're more of a Isaiah than a Jeremiah, if I can make such a comparison, God bless you. But a lot of us are like Jeremiah. A lot of us are screaming in the wilderness, and if you can complain and bitch and moan about our bitching and moaning, but keep in mind, we're doing it for a fucking reason. Not everything is okay. The fact is, it's great to be creative. But if your job sucks all the fucking creative energy out of you, it doesn't matter if you have physical energy at the end of the day. It's irrelevant. You'll end up using it to drink, or smoke, or fuck, or go to a fucking bar, or do something to distract yourself from the acidification of being plugged in to the digital ocean every fucking day of your working life. And often on the fucking weekends, with the great snake called Ard. Anyways, I don't want to spend all time on that topic, but I wanted to sort of get it out of the way, so to speak. Sorry for the ruffling noise. I had to move something out of the way. And let's get going with this topics here. Okay, the first topic actually relates to a post of mine on Minds.com. Excuse me, my throat's kind of like scratchy. I'm gonna drink a little coffee here. Yeah, so if you are unaware of this fact, as a listener of mine, I have been on Minds.com for about a week now. I know I said in the past I would never go on social media again, and I gotta say, the Minds.com experience could end up proving the case once again. And before I get into this topic, I want to talk about something else really quick, because it's related to why I'm going on social media again, probably for the last time, which means that if Minds.com works out, I don't have a reason to go anyplace else. So far, I am happy with this social media platform. Is it perfect? No, the world is not perfect. But do I sense at this moment that there is some dark cabal wanting to restrict what I say or do on Minds.com? No. Do I sense at this moment that there's some bully thug army of crypto whales waiting to pounce on me like they did on Steemit last summer? At Code Monkey Indie, if you want to know. One of the fucking bullies was called At The Marky Mark. No, I don't know. Maybe At The Marky Mark is on Minds too, and maybe he's going to show up with his fucking toady bullies and downvote me and try to scare me away. I don't know yet. But so far, so good. Okay? So far, so good. So yeah, I've gone back on social media, and you would say, Dan, why? Well, let's talk about a couple things really quick, because maybe I'll get into the other topics, but I want to stay on a thread for a bit. As... God, my throat is so scratchy, guys. As dark as I can be, and I am often very dark. If you're a listener, you know this. As dark as I can be, in the last few years, I have never allowed myself the thought that this could be the end of the world. Because, frankly, it's kind of pointless. It doesn't matter. If you do realize it, it really doesn't matter. And ultimately, everybody dies. So this idea that the world might be coming to an end, at least the world we know, it can be a scary thought. And for the most part, I've negotiated with it. You know, it's kind of like that denial, anger, bargaining, turning circle I've spoken about in the past that every American seems to be stuck on. I mean, basically, I think that that's a little bit of bargaining on my part. You know, I'm kind of like saying, well, it's going to be bad, but it won't be that bad. It's going to be terrible, but it'll only be so terrible. Things are going to get worse, but they're only going to get so much worse. And that might be true. I can tell you, I wrote an essay, and I'll probably put a link to it in this podcast and in the post on Minds. But I wrote an essay on my old blog that no longer exists, entitled The Odds of Survival, back in 2015. And it was based upon a conversation with a few of my software engineer colleagues on the topic of, you know, what was going to happen in the near future. Because if you listen to somebody like Ray Kurzweil, subscribe to or listen to the common thread of TED Talks, or if you think Elon Musk is a master of the universe genius, then you probably want to turn off this podcast right now, because you believe in a narrative that might be true. It could be true. I've spoken about this before. There is a probability that Ray Kurzweil is right. I think it's a very low probability, but there is a probability he's right. It's just not a certainty. If you listen to the techno files, the Ray Kurzweil worshippers, they'll tell you that the singularity is a certainty, that it is going to happen. I am going to tell you something. I work at Willy Wonka's. I spend time around the best and the brightest, and if this were a video log and not a blog, you could see my sarcastic air quotes. There is no way in hell we're getting to the singularity, folks. There is something deeply wrong out there, and I don't know what it is. But people are not getting smarter. And frankly, the code we're writing is not getting better. It isn't. Yes, there are more APIs. Yes, there are more frameworks. I'll let you in a little secret, too. The framework craze has a purpose to it. The powers that be, I think they want to turn software engineering to the equivalent of Uber, which means eventually they want to put a computer in charge. But if you want to get there and you know anything about formal language theory, computer science, and artificial intelligence, you also know that it's going to be fucking hard. And a way to get there quickly is to basically restrict your space. This is also related to the concept of a Minsky frame. If you don't know who Marvin Minsky was, Marvin Minsky, I believe I have that correct, is one of the most important persons in the history of modern artificial intelligence. He was one of the first to experiment with kind of these fuzzier techniques like early neural networks. He was actually one of the first to pioneer neural networks. So yeah, Marvin Minsky had developed this concept of frames. And the idea behind a frame is like a meaningful semantic context, okay? A sort of context so that instead of a computer thinking about the entire information space, they can focus, the computer can focus on a specific context and therefore a specific set of information feeds, heuristics, stuff like that. So a lot of the framework stuff, in my opinion, in the software world, and that includes the design pattern fetish, has nothing to do with building better software and everything to do with building software that can build software. If you don't know the history of rational rows, I'm going to give you a homework assignment. Look up the history of rational rows, and then you'll learn more about where this is headed. This is not new. People who say, oh shit, they're going to have computers taking my jobs, folks. That was the plan all along. If you didn't know that, if you really didn't know that, I'm sorry. But that was always the plan. Now, will it work? No, I don't think it'll work. But it certainly is the plan. And that's kind of the thing about my job, is that I don't see it as something amazingly special or something great. It is a holding pattern. And I know that I went off a bit on a side road here, but here's the thing, folks. I have had the thought in recent days that maybe Guy McPherson is right. And if you don't know who Guy McPherson is, I guess I'm referencing a lot of people. This is, a lot of homework assignments. But if you don't know who Guy McPherson is, basically... Oh, that was a message from Willy Wonka's. I should put Willy Wonka on mute when I'm podcasting. Fuck. Anyways, if you don't know who who Guy McPherson is, I will give you a basic frickin'... I'm gonna close that window because, frankly, this microphone on this new recorder is too goddamn sensitive, and I think you can actually hear the airplanes. If you do not know who Guy McPherson is, Dr. Guy McPherson is a professor emeritus, I believe, of Arizona State University. Let's look that up really quick. Guy McPherson. Guy R. McPherson is an American scientist, professor emeritus of natural resources and ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona. He is known for the idea of near-term human extinction, a term he coined about the likelihood of human extinction by 2030. So anyways, let's just talk about this. I have been listening to this guy's video podcast, vlogging off and on for 2 or 3 months now. And I started listening to him because of I think it's horrible, but I've been listening to Dane Wigington's YouTube channel pretty much every fucking week. It's terrible. On the one hand, it feels like something that is truly just alarmist. I mean, if you're a total jerk, you could say Dane Wigington is simply trying to spread fear. On the other hand, Dane Wigington seems like an honest and decent guy. He actually seems like an intelligent guy. He seems like a person with a heart. And when I listen to his voice, my heart tells me this guy is real. Now, is it possible that my heart is wrong? Guys, I've been married and divorced once. Hells yes. It is quite possible my heart is wrong. But I found out about Guy McPherson while listening to Dane Wigington. A quick summary about Dane Wigington. He has a website, I think it's geoengineeringwatch.org, but if you just type Dane Wigington into any browser, you'll find a link to him somehow. And Dane Wigington has done a lot on the issue of geoengineering and solar radiation management, and basically the use of engineering and science and technology to control the weather. So anyways, Dane Wigington was talking about Guy McPherson. And I started listening to this guy, and frankly, he also seems like a decent guy. Intelligent. His arguments make sense. I am not a climate scientist, but I have enough of a background in math and science to know that the basic argument behind these positive feedback loops, like the release of methane around the Arctic Circle, these basic arguments are correct. So this is where things get more real, because I have a person who sometimes listens to my podcast and will complain that, well, Dan, you're just telling people negative shit. Why can't you tell people happy, shiny shit? Well, let me tell you something. Yesterday at Willy Wonka's, we had this little potluck meeting, and one of the colleagues from another team, he was talking about how he grew up in Alaska. And another colleague was going on a trip to Alaska, and the subject came up about the salmon and the weather, and the guy who lived there, he couldn't stop talking. He basically explained, in very personal terms, real terms, terms he saw with his own eyes, because he still visits Alaska. The permafrost is melting, folks. Whatever bullshit you're being told about global cooling or a Maunder minimum or other bullshit, if we were really cooling the permafrost, and so you don't know what the fuck permafrost is, it means permanently frozen. The permafrost around the Arctic Circle, Siberia, Canada, Alaska, places like that, all around the Arctic Circle, the permafrost is melting. Methane is being released. Now, if you don't know, methane over a 10-year period, and again, I'm quoting Guy McPherson, methane over a 10-year period, and actually, I think this is a Dane Wigington quote, is 100 times more powerful a greenhouse gas than CO2. So here's the thing. We have gigatons of methane around the Arctic Circle. We have many gigatons of methane below the Arctic Sea. If the temperatures keep going up, the methane gets released. If the methane gets released, the temperatures keep going up. There is enough methane around the Arctic Circle to basically turn us into Venus. Now, maybe not the Venus, okay? Maybe we don't have average surface temperatures of 800 degrees or something. But hell, if we simply had average daily temperatures of 200 degrees, not much that I know of today on planet Earth could survive that, ever. Maybe an extremophore or two. Maybe. But at those temperatures, the oceans are boiling off. This guy talked about that. Dane Wigington had mentioned in a recent podcast that the salmon in rivers in Alaska were having heart attacks because the water was too warm. Folks, I went rafting on the Six Mile River in 2005. That water was 39 degrees in June. It was cold as fuck. If the water is warmer than that today in Alaska, even in July, if it's in the 50s or 60s, or God forbid warmer than that in the 80s, then yeah, the salmon are going to die. But here's the thing. The salmon are already dying. They're dying in Washington State. They're dying all along the Pacific Northwest. The only salmon that are still kind of doing okay is the nasty shit being raised in pens. Which, oh, by the way, the raising of salmon in pens impacts wild salmon. Actually makes it harder for them to survive. Wow. We're really good at what we do, humans. We disregard the air, we disregard the water, we disregard the soil. We disregard our future, right? I don't believe the guy yesterday was lying. I don't believe he was a plant. And even though some of the videos I've listened to recently of targeted individuals kind of sounds interesting, I am not a targeted individual. I'm a nobody. So I was listening to an honest person tell a nobody yesterday that the place he grew up does not even remotely, he can't even recognize it as what it is today. That it is completely different. I can tell you, I grew up in Washington State. The weather here in 2019 is extraordinarily different from the weather when I was a kid. I'm sorry for breaking your view of the world. That's just simply how I experienced it. Now, you can accuse me of old man syndrome, just like you can accuse the guy from Alaska of old man syndrome. You can do that all you want. But if we are in runaway climate change, and this is what Guy McPherson talks about, abrupt climate change, or near-term human extinction. If we are in a positive feedback with methane, folks, just the methane, this is really, really bad. This isn't a little bad. This isn't Al Gore. We have to, like, you know, fucking do carbon credits, that bullshit. Al Gore's a fucking idiot. Anyways, no, this isn't a little bad. This isn't 100 years from now. If this is a positive feedback on methane release, this is going to happen within a 10-year period with 100% certainty, if that's the cycle we're in. And he might be right. All it might take is one blue ocean event in the Arctic. One summer where the Arctic Ocean is nearly ice-free for all those methyl hydrates to start releasing. And once that starts happening, game over, folks. Okay? It doesn't matter if life returns to planet Earth in a million years. That's fucking irrelevant. You're not going to go into any kind of a fucking underground bunker. The aliens are not going to come to save you, okay? I'm a Christian. I'll tell you, the aliens are most likely demons. So if some alien is visiting you at night, just as a side note, check yourself before you wreck yourself. That's my advice. But the aliens ain't going to save us. The demons ain't going to save us. Lucifer is definitely not going to save us. And as much as God loves us, and I do believe God loves us, God loves us. He has infinite love for us. As much as God loves us, I do not believe he is going to save us from ourselves this time. Now, I say that, and I'm reading the Bible, and I'm coming to understand the Bible to the extent that I can. I say that knowing that God, throughout the Bible, will say often to his people, I'm tired. I'm sick and tired. In fact, I'm going to start collecting. I feel like I need to begin collecting a book of passages. In fact, this might be the book I need to collect out of the Bible. God's sick and tired. Because here's the thing. Even God gets sick and tired. Even God loses his patience. Even God will get angry. Think about Moses. Of all the men and women that have ever lived, Moses was one of the greatest. And yet, God forbid him from entering the promised land. He was the guy that freed the Jews from captivity. He was the guy that led them in the desert. And God forbade Moses from entering the promised land. And why? Because when Moses was using God's magical stick, Moses refused to listen to God's instructions and started banging the stick and crap. And probably God was thinking, holy shit, Moses, I just handed you an atom bomb and you're treating it like a toy. Stop it. Was probably what, I don't know what God was thinking. I mean, whatever. I'm like a pebble of nothing compared to God. But the point is, even God gets sick and tired, folks. So if our expectation is that he's going to save us, yes, I believe there's a chance he'll save us, because even though every once in a while in the Bible, God says, I'm through with you, I'm done with you, I've done everything I can. I help you guys, and you rebuke me, you find false gods. Periodically, the Lord in heaven will say that. And folks, his love is infinite. Even if he says that, he really doesn't mean it. He means it, but he doesn't, right? He means it, but the very next moment, the very next millisecond, the next immeasurable moment of time, God's love is simply there. So I don't know. There is a chance God will help us, but there's also a chance, and folks, this is where things get scary. If Guy McPherson is right, there's a chance that this is part of Revelations, and let me explain why, as someone who has zero credibility having an opinion on the topic of the Bible. I'm still trying to understand my Christianity. So you can listen to this, but full disclosure, I'm not a biblical scholar, okay? I'm not. But one of the themes of Revelations is this notion that there will be some kind of false leader. You know, some people call it the Antichrist. Now, if you've read your books of John, and I forget the specific reference, but John talks about Antichrist. They're not the devil's son. The Antichrist, in John's perspective, are Christians who are misleading Christians. They are false Christians. They are Antichrist in the sense that they're speaking false words. So like some of my podcasts, I've talked about what I call transactional Jesus or BMW Jesus or, you know, Jesus only loves white people Jesus or Jesus only loves black people Jesus. These are not actual Jesuses. These are false. These are antichrists. The Jesus that the preacher talks about at 2 a.m., that when he tells you to send him all this, all your money that you don't have, that's not actually Jesus. He doesn't want poor people to send him money. He'd like to help poor people. He doesn't want to make your life worse. He really doesn't. So the wealth and prosperity Jesus, I think God wants us to be wealthy and prosperous, but the Jesus that specializes in cash flow schemes, this is not the actual Jesus. And yeah, so I worry that if this great crisis arises, that if it becomes impossible, like let's assume for the sake of argument that Guy McPherson is right and that we are, not only are we in the window of abrupt climate change, which means it's virtually a guarantee. In fact, let's talk about one other topic really quick before we go off on the Antichrist. Okay. Global dimming. And I'm going to look up the reference really quick so I give it to you right. And I'm going to DuckDuckGo, James Hansen, Global Dimming. Wow. That's funny. It's like they bury that shit. Yeah. They actually bury this shit. It's really funny. They bury the fact that James Hansen published a paper, and I think it was in 2012, where he essentially proposed, and folks, you need to understand, James Hansen is more or less one of the most important people in the whole area of human-caused climate change. I mean, he went before, I believe, Congress in 1989, and he was one of the first to sort of raise the alarm in a public way about what's called global warming. I believe James Hansen published a paper, and I think it was in 2012, that dealt with the fact that while it's true that the CO2 production is terrible, and again, I'm summarizing, I'm simplifying, it's true that we're producing lots of CO2 as a result of human industrial activity. It's also true that we're producing aerosols and particles that are going into the atmosphere. It's as if, essentially, we're also acting like volcanoes. So what volcanoes can do, and they often do, to cool the environment by blocking the sun, human industrial activity does the same. Now you say, Dan, why did you go off on this global dimming topic? Well, this is why this is really fucking terrible. If James Hansen is right about global dimming, if Guy McPherson is right about global dimming and these positive feedbacks, it basically means this. We're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't. If we stopped industrial activity tomorrow, Or hell, even if we had a major, major economic downturn. And oh, by and guess what, guys? This could explain the whole pedal to the metal of the world's central banks, too, because it looks like pure madness. From any angle, the money printing looks like madness to me, except from the angle of another interpretation, and that is, what if they're just trying to keep the fucking show going until basically the gig is up? There's no way to hide it, and stuff is simply going to fall apart. Food production collapses, human civilization's torn to pieces. Also, this explains the Antarctica fetish for a lot of the rich and powerful, because, folks, if there is any chance of any humans living in a bunker on planet Future Land, where the temperature is way too hot everywhere except for maybe Antarctica, Antarctica might be the only place on Earth for a very long time. And this is the best case scenario, because I bet if I had Guy McPherson on, he'd say, no, Dan, Antarctica's fucked too. But Antarctica might be the only place on Earth that would be survivable. However, because of the convection effect, and because of the fact that the whole Earth could get heated up by that effect, I don't even think Antarctica saves you. But it could be in their heads that they think it will. So maybe that explains all these fucking trips that all these famous fucking people have been making to Antarctica, basically to check out their living pods and their underground, you know, mole tubes and all that other fucking bullshit. They'll get the call. Come to the mothership. Come to Antarctica. I don't know, folks. But the bottom line is this, is that I have allowed myself to consider the possibility in recent days that this could be the end of the world. And for a number of reasons. And I want to circle back. So essentially, if you know about global dimming and abrupt climate change and methane release, then you know that, yeah, okay, this is a scenario. I can research it. You should research this. Don't take my word for it. My advice is when you hear anybody talk about the environment, anybody, period, you need to check what they say. I am not a perfect person. I have been deeply skeptical of the whole climate change thing for a very long time until I had a moment in 2016, I was looking up at the sky and I said, this doesn't look normal to me. Like, I was seeing these patterns created in the sky by airplanes, and it made no sense. I even started videotaping these patterns, some of which are on my website. And the only explanation I could come up with is that this is on purpose. They're, you know, they are doing this to impact the weather, but why? And then when I listened to Dane Wigington, he gave me a reason that kind of made sense. What if the purpose of all this weather manipulation, not the only purpose, because I think they're also using it as a weapon. I think that's also true. But what if one of the goals of climate engineering is to convince Americans that the Earth is cooling, that everything is going to be okay? You know, you'd have to take a trip to Alaska or up north in Canada or Siberia to know the truth. And most of the people I know can't afford to take those trips. And if you go down south and say it's hot as fuck, well, people will say, well, that's because it's the South, baby. So actually, Dane Wigington does give a good, you know, motive for why they would manipulate the weather for Americans this way. And that is to try to convince Americans there is no climate change, there is no global warming, everything's going to be fine. But as you can tell right now, with the boiling hot heat and the weird-ass fucking weather patterns in the Midwest and the fact that we may be on the verge of the first of several lean years, to harken back to Genesis and Joseph and Egypt, we could be on the verge of first of several years where agricultural production collapses. And it could be just the first year could be just gradual by comparison to what's coming. Like, this year could be really bad, folks. Food prices could double this year. They really could. By the end of 2019, you could see all food prices double. And that is being fucking conservative. And that's assuming that Donald Trump doesn't go asshat crazy with money printing by twisting Powell's arm or firing Powell and putting in that Kichikari Kachikari guy. And yeah, he'll print a lot of fucking money. By the end of 2019, if you're an American and you've gotten used to paying almost nothing for food, even though your food has gotten more toxic in the last couple decades and you don't seem to fucking care with all the cancer and autism and whatnot and dementia, yeah, as an American who has all this healthy food, sarcastic air quotes included, you will probably pay double by the end of this year, if not triple. That is a prediction. That is something I think is baked into the cake at this point. If they are not lying to us, if this dude I met yesterday is not some type of a gaslight project, if in fact Guy McPherson is right, this year could be the first of several years where food production collapses. Now you need to consider words like famine and war and death and pestilence. You need to consider the horses. I know some of you are not religious. I know many of you are not, but you need to think about them because what I'm about to tell you is important. If Guy McPherson is right, A, and B, if there is a God, which I believe there is, B, and if C, there's anything to Revelations being about today and not so much about Nero in the first century AD, that's C, then I think that, yeah, abrupt climate change would be the disaster that would put into light the great world leader to come. I'm going to repeat that. If Guy McPherson is right and we're on the verge of human extinction, then really it means we're on the verge of the final act of God's plan vis-a-vis people. And that also means that somebody, and I don't know who this person is, I don't know who they are. I know there are some people who have claimed in the past it's Obama. No, he's an asshat. I don't know who the guy is or the gal. It could be a guy, it could be a gal, it could be an it. In fact, given the fucking weirdness around transgender issues, it could be a transgendered person. I have no fucking clue. But this is what I know. I am a Christian. I believe in God. I believe God is kind and wise, and I also believe God has a plan. And even though the Bible doesn't lay out his plan in perfect terms, it does lay out a lot of his plan if you're willing to ask for God's wisdom and discernment while reading it, if you're willing to meditate and pray. The Bible gives us a lot of information. And as stated, I'm no biblical scholar. But what I can tell you right now, from my perspective, is that if this is what Guy McPherson says it is, then the great world leader would have to reveal himself or herself in the next few years. Now, what's interesting is this 2020 presidential election, because I gotta tell you, folks, if you were gonna be the son of a bitch to rule the world, to drive humans to extinction through lies and deception, if you were going to be the great world deceiver on the final stage of Lucifer's plan, which cannot succeed because it's really God's plan, but if you were going to be part of that story that God has created, I can't think of a more disgusting place than the American political scene. That would be perfect for the Antichrist. Absolutely fucking perfect. Anyways, I have been podcasting for, let me check. Yeah, about 40 minutes, but I think I'm going to hit another topic or two. Because I want to leave that topic. If you want to know why I hate my job, I hate my job because I truly think that it's pointless at this point. I no matter what happens, you know, whether or not Guy McPherson is right, whether this is the end or maybe just really terrible times. Because folks, times can get terrible without the world ending. The 14th century crisis was a real thing. If you don't know what that is, read a book by Barbara Tuchman called, I believe it was titled A Distant Mirror. Yeah, the 14th century crisis was a real thing. Half the people in Europe were dead by the end of the 14th century, 50%. So if you want to understand that sometimes things can go terribly wrong, terribly sideways for humans, and yet somehow we survive, it's true. It's also in the Bible too. So I don't know what's coming, but I can tell you that whatever's coming, it does make it hard for me to give a shit about Willy Wonka and the Great Snake Guard or any of that bullshit. It does make it hard for me to give a shit. I I truly don't. I don't give a shit. Like, I know that in about 30 minutes, I'll run a report, and then I'll check some data, and I'll say, oh, this is okay, this isn't okay. But the fact is, I just don't give a fuck. I do this job to get paid. I do it well enough to get paid. Because I am who I am, I do it well enough that it sucks all the fucking creative energy out of me. So I get home at night, and I don't have any fucking energy to give a shit about anything but to not care, to figure out a way to just disconnect myself. And that's unhealthy, and that's bad. And I don't intend to do it, even if these are the last days. But that's where I am, folks. This isn't fantasy world time. This isn't that. If you want that, this is the wrong fucking podcast to listen to. Next topic. I will admit to something I am neither proud of nor ashamed of. I'll admit to it because I've talked about it before. And I actually had a post tonight on Minds about it. When I was 19 years old, after my freshman year at the University of Washington, I went home for the summer to work for my dad up in the woods. I hated working for my dad. I have gotten over whatever issues I have with my dad. The fact is, we didn't have a great relationship, but he's dead. He's been dead for many years. He died in 1993. And, you know, he wasn't a perfect man, but he was a tough man. And he certainly was a brave man in his way, and he was a good man to the extent that he knew how to be a good man. So anyways, I'm not going to beat up on him, but I hated working for him. He was a logger. I would work up in the woods setting chokers. If you don't know what a choker is a steel cable that often gets frayed because it's being used. So these little frays of steel cable are like hypodermic needles, but they're rusty and they can stick through your hands. A choker is a steel cable that you wrap around a log so that a skidder or a caterpillar or a fucking high lead can drag the log to a landing where the log is put on a truck to be taken to a lumber mill. So I would set chokers. I'd grab the cable off the winch. I'd scramble through the fucking brush, getting scratched, getting cut. It's a dangerous fucking job. And yeah, that's the nicest way to put it. Logging is a dangerous fucking job. I was 19 years old. Perhaps I was making better money than people flipping burgers, but truly, the money wasn't that great either. It really wasn't. It was mainly to help my dad. It helped my dad. It helped to save him money. That's the truth. Me and my brother working for him saved him money at a time when being a small-time logger was getting tougher and tougher and tougher. If my dad had been honest about that, if he had pulled my brother and I aside and said, guys, this is getting tough. This is not the logging business I started in the 50s. I can't make ends meet. I can't make ends meet. Would you guys step up? If my dad had been willing to do that, to sit down with my brother and I and have that conversation, I think that things would have been very different and a lot better. But you know what? As courageous as a man he was, he didn't have the courage to do that. So the summer of 89, I was working for my dad up in the woods. And when it wasn't fire season, we'd work normal days. When it was fire season, we would have to get up at 2 a.m. so we could start work at 4 or 3 and basically work to about 10 or 11. That was fire season. By the end of the summer of 1989, I was in a pretty bad place, and I was drinking with some friends, and I told them I had never had sex. And guys, I spent most of my life as an atheist. I think being raised Catholic turned me into an atheist. I believe in God today, but in 1989, I was an atheist. And so whatever moral guide you would get from being religious at the time, I didn't have that. I simply had this notion that, you know, life is what it is. And yeah, it was, I guess, culture. This is another thing too, guys. In the 80s, culture was telling you that if you weren't having sex, you weren't a real person. Folks, you need to process this shit. Because I'm giving you some truth about culture. And if you really think about it, it tells you about the decline of a society. In the 80s, the media, the advertising, the movies were telling you that if you were a teenager and you hadn't fucked a girl, you weren't a real man. if you were a teenager and you hadn't fucked a boy, you weren't a real girl. So, in the summer of 89, when I was 19 years old and stupid, I went on a trip to Vancouver, Canada, with a bunch of friends. We got really drunk. We went to some strip clubs. We got kind of horny. And I purchased a prostitute. And I'm not proud of it, folks. I'm not proud of it. I tell people I've had sex with 2.5 women. And this is why I say 2.5. The 0.5 is a Schrodinger thing. It's an observation thing. I don't actually know that I actually had sex with that prostitute. I know I was really drunk. I know the whole transaction lasted about 10 minutes. But I'm pretty certain if I consummated, it was basically in the same way that the French bulldog Beans does with a fucking pillow. I don't think it went anywhere. I don't think I penetrated the girl. The whole thing was degrading for her. When I think about it, women on the streets are there because of something terrible, a lot of the time because of something terrible that happened in their lives. And when you're a 19-year-old stupid boy who hates his dad and simply wants to tell people you're not a virgin, maybe you'll do something stupid. But truly, I'm not sure I lost my virginity that night. I really don't know. What I will tell you is this, is that as lonely as I am these days, and I get really lonely, I'm being honest, I'm a 50-year-old man who's had sex with 2.5 women. One woman for many years, off and on, to the extent that she allowed me to have sex with her, and then another woman who is definitely on my list of regrets. That is, I regret not having gone on a second date with the other woman in 2001. But that's it. According to American standards, I'm a total loser. I've had sex with barely three women, and one of them was a prostitute. And I'm not even sure I had sex with her. So yeah, I'm talking about the prostitution thing, not because I'm proud or ashamed. I think I'm a little ashamed, but I'm not ashamed in the sense that I'm carrying it as a hair shirt. I'm talking about it because I've thought a lot about it recently, prostitution. And I've been reading the Bible. And folks, I gotta say something. When it comes to prostitution, I'm not saying adultery. I think the Bible's very clear on adultery and coveting your neighbor's wife. That's wrong. I think the Bible's very clear on, you know, breaking up marriages. That's not a fucking ambiguity. If you're a homewrecker, if you're having sex with a man and a woman that is married, not only are you sinning, but you're causing grievous harm. I'm not saying that people that don't love each other should stay together. Folks, I'm divorced. My ex dumped me. Clearly, she didn't love me long enough for the whole, you know, through good times and bad times bullshit. Because we had some bad times, and that was the time for her to bolt. Okay? I get it. I don't blame her for that. Frankly, I was a hard person to be around. I don't even know why she wanted to marry me in the first place. Because it's not as if who I was ever a mystery. What really bothered my ex-wife is I was becoming somebody different that was really who I was, ultimately. I was allowing myself to be who I was, and that would never work. I don't want to beat up on my ex, but the point is this. After my divorce, I tried dating, I tried the fucking sites, OkCupid, fucking Plenty of Fish, all that bullshit. None of it works for me. And I don't know, I haven't totally given up on dating, but for the life of me, how the fuck do I find anybody I would have anything in common with in Seattle, fucking Washington, but for that matter, anywhere in the United States right now? Almost everybody I know believes in the cargo cult. They believe in the crocodile. They believe that the government will give them everything they need. They believe the government tells them the truth. If there's a false flag in the next 90 days, and I think there's a good chance there will be, if there's a false flag in the next 3 to 4 months, I have no doubt that all of these Americans will go into fucking zombie mode and, you know, and not everybody, I don't mean everybody, but a lot of people go into zombie mode, and it will be, you know, we'll rally around the flag and let's go blow up Tehran, or let's go bomb Beijing, or let's go set fire to Moscow. Or Caracas, right? How does a person like me, that is inherently anti-war, that believes in free enterprise but not the bullshit system we have, that totally supports a person's right to defend themselves to the extent that if you don't want to, like, do the paperwork game, hint, hint, I don't give a fuck. It's not the crocodile's business that you defend yourself. It really isn't. You're a living thing. You have a right to defend yourself. It doesn't mean you have a right to live. That's where things get confusing for liberals and communists. As a living thing, you have a right to defend yourself. There is no guarantee beyond that, okay? I think every human needs food, water, shelter, and liberty. But there's no guarantee of anything else. And none of those things are guaranteed either. It's just good to have them. I think prostitution victimizes women. I think prostitution is a vehicle for victimizing children. I think that many of the men and women who might be adults now that you would encounter in the world of prostitution were abused as children. I believe this. So yeah, I get lonely. I get lonely as fuck, and I fucking go on the web and I'll type in, you know, escorts, because boy, that's the least greasy way of saying hooker, isn't it? The least greasy, the least despicable way of saying hooker is escort. And folks, when I say it this way, I'm not demeaning sex workers. I'm demeaning the people that don't think about it when they have sex with a sex worker. That's what you need to understand. I'm not beating up on prostitutes. Frankly, my heart goes out to women who have to do that, and men. And I wish that not one child was ever put into that world. But I'm not stupid. So I ask the Lord Jesus Christ in heaven to watch out for those poor people in the streets who have to sell their bodies to survive. And I ask the Lord in heaven for forgiveness that I have had thoughts like that, that wanting to have a woman, I'd be willing to pay for one. But that's the truth, folks. I'm not a perfect person. This is not a perfect world. You want me to tell you that there's all these women I'm dating, or that it's so fucking easy for a 50-year-old man to fucking walk down the street and say, hey, baby. It's not, folks. It's not. This isn't TV land. This isn't make-believe. I live in a closet in Little Saigon. Okay? That's where I am. That's my reality. My car was repossessed 2 years ago. That's my reality. I am massively in debt. That's my reality. I am not proud of myself, but I am also not ashamed of myself. That is my reality. I desire above everything to include food, water, and shelter, my liberty. That's my reality. I feel like there is a flaw in a lot of thinking amongst libertarians and anarchists around air, water, and soil. That's my reality. But folks, the reality is also I am deeply lonely at times. And I'm a human being, and I'm a man. And if you want me to tell you that I don't sometimes long for touching a woman, come on, folks, get fucking real. But even if what I really want is a woman, I think about it. And when I think about it, I realize a couple things. One, wanting something is not worth victimizing another person, ever. If you're going to follow the non-aggression principle, you need to think of it in terms of prostitution, too. Because frankly, I'm not convinced the way that prostitution operates today in America, that it's a victimless thing. I think, you know, marijuana is victimless, really, because there is no victim. The person using it isn't a victim. No one's getting victimized. I'm sorry. If you're an anti-marijuana person, you're a fucking idiot. Prostitution is not the same. There are women being victimized. There are. If you don't believe there are, you're an idiot. There are men being victimized. There are gay and lesbian and trans people in the world of prostitution being victimized. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I shatter your fucking world? So yeah, it's not that simple. And that's how I'm going to end this podcast today. If you want to know if I'm a perfect person, no. If you want to know if I'm a lonely person, well, the answer is clearly yes. If you want to know if I think there's a solution to any of these things, not really. Life is sometimes like this. I hate to break it to you, but some people, they die alone. That's what they do. They die alone. They don't have people around them when they die. That happens a lot. There's even people that have loved ones, but because of circumstance, they die alone. Men and women in combat, firefighters, police officers, loggers, fishermen. People will sometimes die alone, even though they have people that love them. You will confront death alone. Oh, I'm sorry for mentioning that. Whether it's the end of the fucking world or not, you will confront death alone. And if you're a Christian, your day of death is your judgment day, whatever day that is. That's the day of kingdom come. So on this Tuesday, July the 23rd, 2019, I can tell you absolutely that I have not given up. I will monitor the great snake. I will go to Willy Wonka's. I will get paid. I'll buy my Glumbus grease and my Gorbis cubes, and I will poop out my insides, and I will replace the emptiness with broken glass and metal shavings and riprap and sawdust and regret. Have a great day.